Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889. From WWNO New Orleans and our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's turkey time again. On this week's Louisiana Eats, we're going to get you in the mood for America's greatest food holiday. Thanksgiving is a time when friends and family gather around the table for convivial feasting and fun. But for some people, like Brandon Schultz, that's dinner for two. He and his beloved companion, Lucy the cat. We'll hear how they celebrate something we're calling Catsgiving. Then we'll go down to Toujak's restaurant to learn about the Thanksgiving tradition there. For decades, generations of New Orleanians and tourists alike gather annually there for the celebration. There's even marching bands involved. And nothing goes together quite like a good pie and a fine bottle of wine. The ladies behind Windowsill Pies team up with our friends at Swirl Wine to show us how beautifully they pair together. Are you hungry? It's time to gobble gobble on this week's Louisiana Eats. While it may be possible to have too many cooks in the kitchen, for cookbook author Brandon Schultz, there's no such thing as too many cats in the kitchen. Brandon and his cat, Lucy, collaboratively wrote a cookbook called Cooking for Two, Your Cat and You, a collection of recipes that will appeal to both man and man's best feline friend. They even share the recipes for their personal Thanksgiving celebration. We had the opportunity to speak with Brandon about his muse and co-chef with some sporadic interjections from Lucy herself.
What's up, Goose? Did you cook anything today? No? Can you make something for me now? It doesn't sound like you did very much today.
Now, Brandon, how did you develop this book? How did it come about in the first place?
You know, this was actually a joke between a friend and me who were talking about book ideas, and he mentioned the very large number of, shall we say, crazy cat people that are out there, myself included. And he was joking that we should have a cookbook for them. And I sort of turned that joke into an actual idea. And when he later found out, he was bitterly jealous that I actually created this book. But I put him in the acknowledgments, so he is properly credited.
So, Brandon, obviously, it sounds like Lucy's the love of your life. How did you all meet? And describe your Lucy to us.
Sure. So Lucy was living with a friend of mine who needed to find a new home for her because her older cat was becoming unsocial, and she'd had the other cat for about 15 years. And so the easier option was to try to find somewhere where Lucy would be happy. So Lucy actually came to my home for an interview, and then she spent a few days with me to see how she would react to the home and to my dog. And she is the most striking cat you've ever seen, and I'm hoping I don't just have a biased opinion. But aside from her piercing green eyes, she has this gold fur that completely covers her stomach. From the back, she appears to be kind of a gray and black striped cat, but underneath all of this is this gold that when the sun or the light hits her, she just glows like a mineral, like a little ball of gold. It's just really striking. So there was no way I was letting Lucy go back home to her other friend once I saw her.
Oh, that's lovely. And before you come up with the cookbook idea, how long have you and Lucy been living together? And how long have you been cooking for her?
So Lucy's about 5 years old right now, and I've had her since she was one. So we've been together 4 years. And I guess before we started the cookbook, then we had been together about 3 years. And we've been cooking every day that we've been living together. I cook a lot, and Lucy is very involved in everything I do. So whenever we're in the kitchen, she's inspecting all the produce that I'm about to chop. She is absolutely inspecting any can that I might be opening. And she is in incredibly heavily involved in anything I do, and that certainly includes the kitchen, which is her favorite place to be.
Well, you even refer to her as your sous chef.
She absolutely is. There's nothing I can get away with in the kitchen without her input. So she's a vital part of my cooking process for me or for her.
So the cooking happens, and then inevitably there's the eating. Describe for me a normal mealtime with you and Lucy.
Well, first, I think it's important to say that you shouldn't make the meals from this book for your cat on a regular basis. It's not healthy for them to have this kind of food every day. This is kind of an occasion, a fun thing to do, maybe once a week, twice a week max. So I don't cook food for Lucy every day. She eats regular pet food. There is a movement of making your own cat or dog food from home, but it's a very laborious process because cats need all sorts of things in their diet, including meat, animal organs, ground bones. So unless you have a meat grinder and some serious dedication, you're not going to be making pet food on a regular basis. But for making these special meals for Lucy, it's just something that she started out by stealing the food from me. And then I thought, well, she needs to have her own. So she stops doing that. And it really just consists of me sitting down to eat and then putting a little bit of what's appropriate for her in her own bowl on her own table, actually.
She has her own table?
She has. Yes, she does. This is a product of also having a dog. So if I were to put her food on the floor, he would absolutely eat it right away. So her food is up on her dishes on her little table.
What's Lucy's favorite food?
Lucy's favorite food is anything dairy. It's kind of a stereotypical thing for a cat, like, you know, the cat drinking out of a saucer of milk. But the truth is that many adult cats are lactose intolerant. Most kittens are not, so they grow up eating the dairy, and it might take them a little while to realize they can no longer tolerate it. But Lucy is one of the fortunate ones who can still have dairy, and she is obsessed with anything, milk, cream, ice cream, anything. She's all over it.
Now, the holidays are upon us, and one of the reasons that I really wanted to have this chance to speak with you, Brandon, is I want to talk about when it's Thanksgiving dinner, you and your feline friend. So tell me about Thanksgiving at your house.
So Thanksgiving at my house is kind of a rarity. I usually go away to see family, but there have been times that I stayed home and cooked, and of course, Lucy is involved, and this will be one of those years. Lucy and I are already planning Thanksgiving dinner for some friends and their children. It's a very exciting time for the cat and the dog. It's very rare that I will give them table scraps unless I've made them something particular, but Thanksgiving is one of the times, of course, that we share with everyone, including our pets. So Lucy is definitely looking forward to Thanksgiving, and I will make her her own plate for her own table, of course.
What's on the menu, Brandon?
You know, it's going to be pretty traditional this year, I think, as a result of the people who are coming and what they've requested. So it's going to be your standard turkey, mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, corn. And these are almost all things that the cat can eat, too. So she's not going to be missing out on anything, except for maybe the cocktails.
Well, there's a beautiful picture in your book that shows your plate and Lucy's plate. And really, much to my surprise, Lucy likes jellied cranberry sauce too, huh?
Yeah, you know, it might seem surprising, but really, if you think about it, cranberry sauce, what is it? It's just a dessert. It's just kind of a sweet thing that we put on our plate or that we are intended to put on top of the meat to give it more flavor. So it's not really that surprising in the end that the cat is also attracted to at least exploring this kind of sweet, good-smelling thing that's on the side of the plate. She may not finish it all, but she'll have fun with it.
Brandon, I know you've gotten the whole listening audience just all ready to start cooking for their cat and setting the table for the kitty and the whole nine yards. There has to be some caution applied, though. What are the most dangerous things that you need to look out for and make sure that your furry friend isn't lapping up?
Yeah, so there are two main considerations here, and one of them is portion control, and the other one is ingredients. So for portion control, especially at a time like Thanksgiving when we're all thinking to eat as gluttonously as possible, it's really critical to remember that your cat is incredibly small and needs to eat very little portions, and you're not offending them by only giving them a tiny dish. You're really looking out for them. Fortunately, a cat is not too likely to overeat as a dog might, but you still really want to control how much of everything you're giving them. And the second consideration is ingredients, because there are some things that are perfectly fine for humans that are absolutely not fine for cats. And a lot of those go into things we would make on Thanksgiving, like onions, and garlic are complete no-nos for a cat. And you might not see onion or garlic on top of your dish, but you might remember that you probably have some kind of onion product going into your stuffing. So the stuffing is out of the question for the cat, and also for your dog, if you have the dog around. A lot of spices are questionable for your cat in larger doses, but I just think it's best to play it safe and not give the cat anything with things like cinnamon, nutmeg, too much salt or sugar, which are also things we should keep in mind for ourselves.
That's true.
And too much sugar. But we really want to restrict it for the cat with a much smaller body size and much smaller systems. Nuts and raisins are things you might have around. You might have nuts around for, just on the table before dinner. You want to make sure the cat's not having any of those. And then there are some fruit considerations. Several fruits are okay for cats, but you want to stick to the fleshier parts of the fruit and avoid the seeds and anything that's close to a pit if this fruit has a pit in it. But grapes and, like I said, raisins are totally out of the question. And there's some controversy over tomatoes, some opposite camps that say they're okay and they're not okay. So the best plan is to just avoid them.
Well, Brandon, congratulations on your new book. I know that people are just going to be dying to get their own copy. And what a great holiday gift for anybody who has a close personal relationship with their little feline friend like you.
Absolutely. And there are many of us out there.
Well, I'm so glad we found you. And thanks for talking with us on Louisiana Eats. And happy Thanksgiving to you and Lucy.
Thank you. Same to you.
You want a kiss? Come over. Give me a kiss. Good girl.
Brandon Schultz and Lucy Schultz Ozenlund, authors of Cooking for Two, Your Cat and You. While restaurants typically close over the holidays, there's one place in New Orleans' French Quarter where you can enjoy a Thanksgiving feast without ever having to set foot in the kitchen. For generations, Toujac's restaurant has been offering Thanksgiving and Christmas dinners to residents and visitors alike, becoming an essential part of the Crescent City's Thanksgiving experience.
Hello, I'm Mark Latter. I'm the proprietor of Toujac's restaurant.
I was fortunate enough last year while I was working on the book to have the opportunity to spend Thanksgiving Day at Toujac's myself and hear some of the amazing stories of families who have been coming there for generation and generation. And what a great thing that a service that you all provide, that you all go to work and everybody comes to Toujac's for their holiday dinner. I think that in some places that might surprise people, because I think Christmas and Thanksgiving in particular are looked upon nationally as two of the holidays that you're supposed to stay home for. How do you see this New Orleans tradition being different than any place else in the world?
I think more people would be disappointed if we were not open on Christmas and Thanksgiving Day as opposed to being open. The staff loves working that day. We see the same people every year. There's a lot of families we've seen the children grow up year after year. So I think it's what people expect.
Who are some of those people that stand out in your mind?
Well, really, and my sister and I, Shane, was talking about this earlier in the week, the Bruno family. The Bruno family, it's Pepe Bruno and his 16 or 17 guests, and they're all in the family. And Shane has seen, you know, four-year-old girls that are now 21-year-old. And just literally the entire family has grown up in Toujac's every Thanksgiving.
Isn't that remarkable? And Christmas, how is Christmas a little different from Thanksgiving? What's the difference between those 2 days at Toujac's?
We see more tourists for Christmas because there are less places open. So since New Orleans is such a huge destination for December and Christmas and Réveillon, we definitely see a lot more tourists and we're busier for Christmas.
One of the things that really surprised me, that totally caught me off guard, but that you must be used to, when I was there last Thanksgiving and I was enjoying my Thanksgiving dinner, all of a sudden I heard the sound of a marching band. And I went out on the balcony because I was up on the second floor, and it wasn't just a marching band. It was an entire parade of bands. Tell me what happens at Toujacks in the middle of Thanksgiving afternoon.
So I believe that's for Bayou Classic, and we take the bands of Southern Grambling, which probably have the two best marching bands in the country, and there's a parade. There's like almost like a homecoming queen for each school, and it's almost like being in a small town high school homecoming for Grambling and Southern. You see the homecoming courts, you see the bands, maybe even some of the football players are involved.
Of course, you grew up right there. You've experienced, well, you really didn't have holidays anyplace else, did you? Tell us about
that. So the entire family has worked every Christmas and Thanksgiving since I remember. I waited tables, bussed, washed dishes, or cooked. My mom answered the phones, and my sister, who still hosts, upstairs.
And what's on the menu?
We're actually changing it up this year for the first time. We are not serving turkey. We will have a couple items, which the recipes are in the cookbook. We'll have a shrimp remoulade salad, sweet potato and crab meat bisque soup. Then we'll do a selection of entrees for the first time and bread pudding, which is also in the cookbook as well. There'll be some sort of filet mignon. There'll be a fish entree, local fish, and a chicken entree.
Well, good. There'll be some sort of bird then.
So we'll try to make everyone happy.
Well, so that everybody at home, if they're enticed by the recipes that we mentioned, I'm going to post for everybody on the Louisiana Eats site that sweet potato and crab meat bisque. I have to admit, this is something that I'd never heard of or tasted, but I've started teaching it in some of my cooking classes, and it is one of the most delicious fall soups I've ever tasted. Do you have any idea who thought that up?
So when I was working in the kitchen for my father, he was making me do every station in the restaurant so I could be able to know what everyone's going through. We were just trying to come up with new soups because he wanted to run the same corn and crab, spinach and crab, and gumbo. So we had sweet potatoes in-house, pureed the sweet potatoes, and then, of course, it's New Orleans. You have to have crab meat and then chicken stock. And really, it was a creation that everyone in the kitchen that night, we all just put it together. There's tri-colored peppers in it, and it really came out delicious.
Another really interesting twist, you know, New Orleans bread pudding, it's so classic. And for a time, you all put an interesting twist on bread pudding at holiday time. Tell me about that.
Since cranberries are so prevalent during the holidays, instead of the banana liqueur sauce that we normally do on our bread pudding or a praline sauce, we decided to go with a cranberry sauce. We just sweeten it up with some brown sugar.
Approximately how many people dine at Toujacks on Thanksgiving Day?
We will serve approximately 600 people.
600 people. When does it start and when does it end?
We go from 11 a.m. straight through the day until 10 o'clock.
That is incredible. Must be one of your busiest days of the year.
Thanksgiving is the second busiest and Christmas is the busiest of the year.
Well, I can't wait for the holidays this year. So I'll be down there to keep you company and greet those guests. And I hope everybody comes to see us at Toujacks soon.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Mark. Mark Ladder of Toujacks Restaurant. To learn more about their famous dishes and the history of Toujacks, be sure to pick up a copy of my new book, Toujacks Cookbook, Creole Recipes and Lore in the New Orleans Grand Tradition, in bookstores everywhere. Does your traditional Thanksgiving dinner include that monstrous bird known as turducken? When we come back from a short break, we're joined by Sarah Rowan, a courageous cook who's actually attempted to make Paul Prudhomme's turducken in her home kitchen. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's.
Here I am back home again, and I'm here to rest. All they ask is where I've been, knowing I've been.
Wisconsin native Sarah Rowan is the author of Gumbo Tales, Finding My Place at the New Orleans Table, a book that follows Sarah's immersion into New Orleans culture through her discovery of the city's food traditions. After Chef Paul Prudhomme patented the turducken, she found herself preparing the dish and lived to tell the tale. Here she explains the process behind creating this Thanksgiving monstrosity.
Well, the first time I tasted a turducken, I bought a portion of it from K. Paul's. At K. Paul's, they serve turducken once a year, and it's on the day before Thanksgiving. And one year I waited, I was taking a flight home to Wisconsin for Thanksgiving, where I'm from, but I really wanted to taste his turducken. And so I waited in line, like I got in line. There was a long line actually for dinner. And I got in line probably an hour before they opened the doors, and I got my turducken to go, and I just jetted to the airport and ended up eating that first taste of turducken in the airport. Right before I boarded. And I have to say, it is not an attractive food. But when you think about it, Thanksgiving isn't such an attractive meal. I mean, the turkey's gorgeous when you take it out of the oven, but once you get everything on your plate, you know, traditional American Thanksgiving or traditional even New Orleans Thanksgiving, it's pretty brown. It's pretty monotone. Except for the cranberry sauce. And this was definitely many shades of brown. It was very brown, but I have to say it was very tasty. Especially Paul Prudhomme's version. When I made it at home, you know, I followed his recipe to the letter. So I take no credit for how delicious it was. But there are just like, you know, pretty much any recipe of his that you'll follow. I also learned how to make gumbo from his cookbook. And there's just a million flavors going on at once. And as you're making it, you're not quite sure how it's going to work out. And it all feels very heavy-handed and scary, especially, you know, for a girl from Wisconsin who grew up maybe having salt in her food. and in the end, his food tastes round and full and beautiful. And that's brilliant. That's what the turducken is like, I have to say. In Paul Prudhomme's The Prudhomme Family Cookbook, which I brought as a prop.
Which was his second book.
Well, I think that's true, yeah. Paul Prudhomme's Louisiana Kitchen was maybe his first.
And
this is the one
two.
With the turducken recipe in it.
Okay.
It's 14 pages long.
Oh!
And his turducken is much more complex. And I think, consequently, better tasting than the turduckens that you can buy in a store. But his turducken involves a chicken stuffed with oyster dressing and then put inside a duck that has been stuffed with cornbread dressing, put inside a turkey that has been stuffed with andouille dressing.
Wow.
Sew it all up, roast it for around 12 hours, 12 to 13 hours. Let it rest for at least an hour and serve it with an eggplant sweet potato gravy.
Sarah, 14 pages long. Takes a while just to read that recipe. The birds themselves, partially deboned?
Deboned except for like a little tip of the, except for the wings and like a little tip of the leg bones, he suggests. I've made his turducken twice. The first time I made it, I asked the butcher to debone my birds, and the butcher did that except for the leg bones, which I didn't realize until I got to the stage of stuffing the birds and roasting the entire turducken. And it sent me into a complete panic because, I mean, if the roasting takes 12 hours and the resting takes at least one, you're already looking at
pulling an all-nighter.
Half of a day. Yeah, pulling an all-nighter or waking up really early. And I had in my notes that I'd overslept that day. And so that when I saw that I had to like debone parts of the birds, I had a panic. And I did it, not very gracefully. In Paul Prudhomme's cookbook, he gives really lengthy instructions for deboning the birds yourself. When I talked to him, he conceded that it's maybe better to have a professional do it. Because one little slip of the knife and you'll have a hole that eventually has stuffing like oozing out of it during the roasting.
Now, what about the stuffings? How long did that make? Because kind of break it down for us. What was the order of things? Because if I was approaching it, I would think probably you make the stuffings in advance.
So I like to say to make a turducken at the last minute, you start 3 days ahead of time.
Ooh, okay.
I mean, shopping in New Orleans, I had to go to 3 different grocery stores to get every ingredient. I'm not sure if this is exact, but you make something like 15 pounds of stuffing because he also likes you to have a little bit extra to roast and have on the table. Yeah, so making the stuffings alone, you should do that, take a day just to do that. The stuffings need to be cooled before you stuff the birds. And so maybe the next day or the next night, depending on whether you want to let the turducken roast as you sleep or during the day, that's a day in itself. And you do need to, you don't need to baste a turducken, but it lets off so much grease, especially from the duck inside, that you can't just go to sleep and forget about it for 12 to 13 hours. You need to set your alarm every few hours to get some of the duck fat out of the roasting pan.
Oh, gosh.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
As if Thanksgiving can't be exhausting enough. How many people does that monster feed?
A lot. I mean, honestly, there are only maybe a dozen slices that get a cross-section of everything, of all 3 birds and all 3 stuffings. There are only maybe a dozen perfect slices. But, I mean, how many people could you feed? I can't even answer that because way more than I fed. I mean, you could probably feed 20 to 30 people.
When you think about making a turducken again, what would it take for you to get into that 3-day experience?
Poppy, I think you could convince me to make one because I would love to convert you and to prove that it's possible to love a turducken. But I'm not looking forward to making a third turducken. Let's put it that way.
Okay, I'll make a deal. If I ever get the compulsion, we'll cook it side by side. How about that?
That sounds great. An extra pair of hands would help with the 15 pounds of stuffing.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks so much for talking turkey with us, turducken style, on Louisiana Eats.
Thank you, Poppy.
Sarah Rowan, author of Gumbo Tales. The odds are good that your Louisiana Thanksgiving table will include spinach madeleine. This creamy, slightly spicy side dish became popular after the recipe appeared for the first time in the first edition of River Road's Recipes. This best-selling community cookbook was originally published by the Baton Rouge Junior League in 1959. To hear the story of how it was created, we went straight to the source and spoke with its originator, Madeleine Wright, at her St. Francisville home.
Well, it was kind of by accident, actually. I was serving my 2-table bridge club for lunch, and I made a cream spinach, and I had this jalapeno cheese I had bought and didn't know what to do with it. I think it had first come on the market. It must have been about 1956. And I just wanted to use it for something, so just on a fluke, I decided to put it in the cream spinach. And something wonderful happened. My friends raved about it at first, and then I served it to a supper club, and the men liked it. And just at that time, the Junior League decided to publish a cookbook, and we were required to turn in 3 recipes. So spinach was the only thing that I had really created. I didn't consider myself a fine cook. I knew enough to know that if you make a cream sauce and you put cheese in it, it becomes au gratin. So that gave me the courage to put the jalapeno cheese into the cream spinach.
And then you just named it for yourself?
Well, actually, I did. I've always been a little bit embarrassed over that. But I have a philosophy that a name for a dish is very important. And they all have a certain rhythm to the title. Look at shrimp remoulade, oysters Rockefeller, Caesar salad, steak Diane. They all have this little rhythm to them. But anyway, I was looking for a name for my spinach and came across a recipe in a French cookbook that I have for a veal madeleine.
Yeah.
So I said to myself, why not to spinach madeleine?
And the rest is history, huh?
That's right.
So when did you first discover you had such a winner on your hands?
Well, only when people started telling me that. And the book sales picked up, and there have been people who said that the recipe is what sells the book. I don't believe that, because we had a very active committee of Junior League members who, in the beginning, took their cookbook samples with them everywhere they traveled and introduced them to the hotel gift counter or whatever, and they promoted the book very faithfully.
Well, one of the ingredients listed is spinach liquor. Maybe you should explain what that is.
Well, we've had a lot of fun with that, too. The liquor that the vegetables are cooked in is an old-fashioned Southern name. And I put that in, and I think I called it vegetable liquor. It was just the juice off of the spinach, which was to go into the white sauce. And we've had a lot of fun because most of the young people don't know what that means. They don't associate liquor with vegetables. Actually, I have a friend whose daughter was off at school. Actually, she was at the University of Arkansas, and she wanted to make the spinach madeleine. So she went to the liquor store to get this vegetable liquor. And the clerk there said, well, he didn't have any spinach liquor, but that he'd recommend she use bourbon because it was made out of corn.
Okay, here comes the tough question now. What do you do now that Kraft has discontinued making that essential spinach madeleine ingredient, jalapeno cheese?
Well, I'm using that new one. Somebody up in Minnesota, I believe it is, a company called Parker Company, has started making a jalapeno cheese, and they have packaged it kind of like the original Kraft product, which was a little roll of cheese, about 5 or 6 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
And Parker Company is making this one similar to that. It doesn't produce exactly the same results as the Kraft product did.
Oh,
this,
dear.
This is the best substitute that I have found. Is to use, and all the grocery stores in this area at least stock that now.
There is an article online that claims that the dish came from the Green Springs Inn by a woman named Madeleine Neville?
Well, that is I. You see, I've had three husbands.
Okay.
I'm in the River Road. There's Madeleine. I think I'm Mrs. William Raymond in that book. But we weren't progressive enough to use the woman's name. We were always Mrs. somebody or other. But then I married this Texas Aggie whose name was Neville. And when we moved over here, I opened a bed and breakfast. I had divorced that first husband, as I told you, and found myself in a jam. But I opened a bed and breakfast here, and I named it Green Springs Inn. So I did serve it some, but I truthfully got tired of seeing that on the breakfast plate every morning.
That will happen. Well, Mrs. Wright, I want to thank you so much for talking with us on Louisiana Eats, and I want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Well, thank you very much, and the same to you and all the listeners.
Madeleine Wright of St. Francisville, Louisiana, creator of Spinach Madeleine. Foods discontinued the jalapeno cheese roll that inspired Madeline Wright's original Spinach Madeline, it caused great panic among Louisiana Spinach Madeline lovers. There would simply be no Thanksgiving without Spinach Madeline on the dinner table. Never fear. There's a way to recreate the original by using fresh chopped jalapenos, which frankly sounds better to me anyway. That said, there's no way to get around incorporating that favorite American processed food, Velveeta. To make Spinach Madeline, first cook a couple of packages of frozen chopped spinach. Drain the spinach, but hang on to that cooking liquid. You'll need it later in the recipe. Then, you make a roux by cooking flour and butter together until the raw flour taste disappears. You're not browning the roux. This is a classic French blonde roux, which takes about 3 or 4 minutes to make. Add the onion and cook it until it softens. Then whisk in about a half cup of the spinach cooking liquid, whisking until it's all smooth. Add the celery and garlic salt, the jalapeno peppers, and the cubed Velveeta cheese. Keep stirring until the cheese melts, then stir in the spinach. Season with salt, red pepper, and Worcestershire sauce, and serve right away, or put it in a buttered casserole dish topped with buttered breadcrumbs. Then you can keep it overnight in the fridge, or even freeze it for later use. Spinach Madeline is good on crackers and fabulous in a stuffed baked tomato. For a copy of this recipe, visit our website at itsneworleans.com or at wwno.org. I'm Poppy Tooker, and Spinach Madeline is real Louisiana Eats.
Spinach has vitamin A, B, and D, but spinach never appealed to me. But one day while having dinner with a guy, I decided to give it a try. I didn't like it the first time. It was so new to me.
What's the best way to roast a turkey? We'll answer that question when we come right back. Stay tuned.
I used to run away from the stuff, but now somehow I can't get enough. I didn't like it the first time. Oh, how it grew on me.
I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen and Zatarain's. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. What's the best way to roast a turkey? It's not hard, but it does take time. 2 to 3 days before Thanksgiving, combine 2 tablespoons of salt with 1 teaspoon of pepper. Rub those seasonings all over your bird, starting with the back, sprinkling a bit inside of the cavity, then flip it over and finish with the breast and legs. Then, put your turkey on a wire rack set over a rimmed baking sheet and refrigerate it uncovered for up to a couple of days. Yes, uncovered. One of the secrets to a really good bird is getting it very dry before the roasting process begins. When it's time for cooking, let the turkey sit out on your counter for about 2 hours while you preheat the oven to 450 degrees. Transfer the turkey to a roasting pan and pour 1.5 cups of turkey or chicken stock into the pan. Slide the bird into the oven and lower the heat to 350 degrees. About 1.25 hours into the roasting process, rotate the pan in the oven and let it continue to roast for another 2.5 to 3 hours. You'll know your turkey's done when the juices run almost clear from the thigh, with just a touch of pinkness, and your instant read thermometer registers 170 degrees. Finally, put your bird in a warm spot in the kitchen and let it rest for at least 30 minutes before the carving begins. I'm Poppy Tooker, and my roasted turkey makes for some good Thanksgiving Louisiana eats. No Thanksgiving meal would be complete without a glass of wine and a slice of flaky pie. For almost 4 years, friends and bakers Marielle Dupre and Nicole Iden have owned and operated Windowsill Pies, a pop-up pie business that gives New Orleans pie lovers a chance to order a variety of savory and sweet baked versions for any occasion. Just in time for Thanksgiving, Windowsill Pies teamed up with Swirl Wine for a pie and wine pairing focusing on the flavors of the season. Producer Joe Schreiner caught up with Marielle and Nicole at their commercial kitchen just off of Chapatula Street as they prepared their baked delicacies for that evening's event.
I'm Marielle Dupre.
And I'm Nicole Iden.
And we are the gals
of Windowsill Pies.
We worked together at Mattinetti's, so that was before the storm, before Katrina.
Yeah, but we, you know, kept in touch after the storm. We were already good friends.
And Nicole and I started this in 2011, mid-2011, so it was a few years later.
The sort of roles we play, you know, we're very different.
Our complementary.
We have complementary skill sets. We have very similar values, but really different personalities and different skill sets. And that's really been an asset. I can't imagine doing this business by myself. Initially, it was my idea. I called Marielle up. She didn't even have to think about it. She said yes right away. And then at that point, it was a shared vision. Our tagline is French-inspired, Southern-styled, New Orleans-baked. So we do really try to draw from those influences, but give everything a little twist and make it our own.
We keep a seasonal menu of about 4 to 6 pies and tarts at any given time. We change a few times a year. The vanilla bean bourbon pecan is our signature pie, and we have a lot of local ingredients in that one. The pecans are from Bergeron out of New Iberia, and we use Steen's cane syrup and local honey from Ponchatoula. Maker's Mark, vanilla bean, vanilla extract. So it has a lot of flavor, and it's going to be a little less sweet and just more complex than your typical pecan
and
pie.
It's garnished with organic Inglewood pecans.
That's true, and those are local as well.
Maybe 10 more minutes.
Yes, and then it says add foil. It said 30 minutes and add foil, but I didn't want to just do 30
more
minutes before we even turned it. So I thought 20 minutes.
Oh, that was 20? Okay, that
yeah,
makes sense.
And then, yeah.
Perfect.
So for Thanksgiving, we definitely take sales directly, as we always have. Our sales channels have grown through Whole Foods. Our pies are available to pre-order at all three area stores at the holiday table. And you can also find us at different farmers markets throughout the month.
Initially, in the old days, our Thanksgiving pickup was quite a celebration. We had everything boxed up, ready to go. We had probably opened some wine or champagne, actually.
Yeah,
we opened some champagne.
Opened champagne.
It was at my house. So it was pretty intimate, and we'd greet all our customers, and a lot of them would hang out for a little bit, too. So as we've grown, we've changed that a little bit, but we do that still here. So we will have our special Thanksgiving pickup
on Wednesday
before Thanksgiving from 6 to 8, and customers will come, and we'll have everything ready to go. And we'll probably be having some champagne. Because it's a pretty intense week.
I think pies are just emblematic of, like, I don't know, a really nice old-fashioned sensibility that there's something, or you share a pie. You know, you don't like bake a pie for yourself and sit down and have a slice alone, at least I guess not in my imagination. It seems something that's just meant to be shared with friends and family and brings people together. And oh, sorry, be right back.
Marielle just brought the amaretto pear and dried cherry out of the oven, which is amazing.
We're going to be tasting that at Swirl tonight with a sparkling rosé, I believe, is what we paired with it. So we're doing a Thanksgiving-themed wine and pie pairing at Swirl tonight. They've paired 4 wines with 4 of our pies, 1 savory and 3 sweet, in preparation for the holiday. So
we're excited to share that with people tonight.
The savory is a winter root vegetable with pernod. A lot of root vegetables, a little fennel, and it's finished off with pernod. It's really savory and delicious. The pumpkin we call our gingered pumpkin tart with candied pepitas. And then, yeah.
Well, that is within this, isn't it?
Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And here's Erin.
So she's gone through what the pies are, right. But I'll tell you, you know, typically when we do these tastings, we talk about the wines and the region and all of that. But now tonight we're just gonna focus on why we chose these wines to pair with these pies. And the first one is the Dash Riesling. And that's from Mendocino County, just a bit north of San Francisco. It's 100% Riesling, 100% steel fermented, and it's fermented to dry, which I think is something that Americans are just learning, that there is dry Riesling. You learned that, Lassa.
My name is Beth Riblett. I'm the owner of Swirl. We opened about 9 months after Katrina. One of our big focuses of the store is wine and food pairing. It's what we love to do. We schedule all kinds of events around wine and food pairing, wine and cheese pairing, wine and pie. We even did wine and donuts. And so the opportunity to do this with them tonight was a really, really fun thing to sit down and kind of pair all these pies with not sweet wines, which was the challenge. Also kind of a holiday focus. For me, Thanksgiving, for one, it's our busiest single day of sales for the year. And I love it because it's a holiday that's focused purely around wine, food, and sharing it with friends and family. It's not about obligatory gifts. It's not about, you know, it's just about sitting around a table and enjoying food, wine, and friends together.
There's strawberry, lemon, and lime. What do I care? Blueberry, apple, cherry, pumpkin, and plum. Call me for dinner, honey, I'll be there. Take me up that old Beet Street. The little Jack Horner got nothing on me. Oh, me, oh, my. Love that country pie.
One of the things I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving is the Roman Taffy Candyman. To celebrate 100 years of the mule-drawn cart where the candy's made and sold on the streets of New Orleans, Ronnie Cotman, the grandson of the original Roman Candyman, Sam Cortese, will be on Magazine Street at Audubon Park, beginning at 10 a.m. on Sunday, November 22nd. To celebrate the centennial, Ronnie is rolling back the price of the candy to a nickel a stick, the same price his grandpa charged. He's hoping generations of families will stop by for a photo op and to enjoy another stick of that chewy, delicious treat. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us next week when we'll travel back to Paris before the recent shocking terrorist attacks to remind us all what a magical, lovely place it is and will be again to visit.
Okay.
Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour, madame.
Bonjour.
Production Bordeaux.
That's so good.
I know.
Yeah, it's really, why would you have to cook?
You don't have to, ever.
Amazing.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Rouse's Markets, and Zatarain's. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and by Dickie Brennan Steakhouse, a local New Orleans steakhouse serving prime beef in New Orleans French Quarter. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Sean Johnson. Come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eats studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO and the University of New Orleans.